fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America,
the next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. Hey, happy post-Monday for the Tuesday celebration. Greatest day of the entire week. That's the way we roll here each and every day. So wonderful to have you. This is the Voice of Reason. I am Andy Hoosier, broadcasting out of the heart of the nation. Your millennial general reporting for duty. We got a lot to talk about today, for sure. Before we get started, though, can I ask you a simple question? This blew my mind. Never seen this before. But I was getting ready for the program just literally a couple minutes ago. I was filling up my water cup, just going over the last few things I was going to talk about. And one of my coworkers across the aisle here in our sports studio here in the Wichita area where I broadcast out of, he was getting ready as well. And he was pouring himself a cup of coffee, which, why you're drinking coffee at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I don't know. That's your prerogative. That's cool. Whatever. I don't drink a whole lot of coffee. But when I do, it's usually in the morning, not in the afternoon, unless I want to stay up late at night. But I was watching him pour a cup of coffee. Then I saw something that blew my mind that I've never seen before. And maybe it's just me because I don't drink a lot of coffee. But show of hands, does anybody put maple syrup in your coffee? What? What is this? What is this? Blew my mind a little bit. Now, they said I was weird for putting honey in my tea, but that's honey and it's supposed to go in tea. That's what you're supposed to do. He was putting maple syrup in his coffee. Can someone please explain to me the weirdness of this world today? By the way, he is the one that said he was born like 6 months after 9/11. So, yeah, he was born in 2001, which makes my brain hurt a little bit already. Anyways, and that's the way we started off the program. So welcome into it. I know. Oh, ways to make me feel old. Thank you very much. Austin Bannon, he'll be joining us on the show at the bottom of the hour. He's the Employment Policy Fellow for Americans for Prosperity. We're going to chat about Bidenomics, the job market, the have we really created the 15 million jobs that Joe Biden's told us that he's created on the campaign trail and throughout the administration for the past 3 years? So we'll get to that and so much more coming up at the bottom of the hour. There are definitely a few things that we need to touch on throughout the show program today because some things that just happened recently as we get into our What's Trending.
What's trending today?
I want to start off with this one here as let's go to the campaign trail and not necessarily the Republican or Democrat, but big news really within the last hour or so, the official pick for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on the independent campaign trail for his vice presidential pick of philanthropist Nicole Shanahan, making this rally statement just a bit ago.
The Democrats and Republicans are trying to divide America. They tell us to hate each other, to mistrust each other, to accuse each other of treason, to warn us against these in apocalyptical terms that democracy itself is doomed if the other side wins. They turn families against each other. They turn neighbors against each other and friends against each other. They're trying to divide America, but Nicole and I will unite it. And that's our path to victory.
All right, so that audio from Fox News, that was just, like I said, an hour or so ago with the official rally and announcement of Nicole Shanahan, a philanthropist who has now been nominated to be the vice presidential pick for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I got to admit, a little bit disappointed. I like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I like some of his policies. I like what he's doing on the campaign trail. I think that he's very much needed in the political realm today. It's very odd for some, me included, to acknowledge that Robert F. Kennedy Jr., being a Kennedy, is kind of one that's outside of the establishment realm in one of those non-establishment, non-politician types. Because you would think the Kennedy family would be really tied into this, but the Kennedy family has essentially shunned RFK Jr., and he says that he is going to be a spoiler for both sides, saying that he can win this race. I highly doubt that an independent candidate and third-party candidate will be able to win a presidential race. It hasn't happened, and it's not going to happen, but I think that he is going to pull predominantly from one side or the other. As I've said before, I'm not quite sure what side he's going to necessarily pull from right now, but he is going to definitely be an influence and have an effect in the race in some way, shape, or form. I just don't know exactly who that's going to be.
Our campaign is a spoiler. I agree with that. It's a spoiler for President Biden and for President Trump. It's a spoiler for the war machine. It's a spoiler for Wall Street and Big Ag and Big Tech and Big Telecom and Big Pharma and the corporate-owned media and all the corrupt politicians and corporations. That's why they're trying to keep me off the ballot and to frighten you into choosing between the two tired and unpopular heads of the Uniparty.
I get it. It's a great message, and I think it's going to win over some, especially in the younger generation. I think the independent young generation, the millennials, the Gen Zers that are out there looking for something a little bit different, it will resonate with them. And he's got some great policies on fighting against that establishment machine. I will say, though, that I don't think that Donald Trump is part of the Uniparty. The Republican Party has fought tooth and nail to not get behind him in many aspects, especially from the establishment Uniparty type candidates that are in Washington, D.C., and the Democrats absolutely despise him. So Donald Trump is in no way, in my opinion at least, one of the Uniparty members. So he's the outsider, but I also think that RFK is definitely an outsider as well, being shunned from his own family, especially because of his stance on the big pharma and with the COVID-19 vaccines and so on and so forth. But in order to be in this race, and I've said this before as well, there's two things that you need in politics, which is a lot of money and a good PR team. But one of those things that you need to be a substantial candidate for president needs to be someone who, I mean, not to say another way, has sex appeal. And not by like actual sexiness, but by the sex appeal of you need to be a celebrity. You have to be a celebrity with a name to where people will get behind you. And I'm sorry, but I don't know anything about a Nicole Shanahan. I have no clue who she is. I know that she worked with him on the campaign before as like a treasurer. She's done some super PAC stuff working to try and help him out. So it makes sense why he would partner up with her. And she could be an extremely smart individual. Very possible. She's a philanthropist. Did a lot for the communities wherever she's at and whatever organizations that she's helping. But no one knows that name, and that's not going to help him. There was rumor that he was going to have either Aaron Rodgers or Jesse Ventura potentially be vice presidential picks with him. And while those maybe would have made it a little more cartoonish for the race, at least those were names that people knew that would get people talking about him. But this name does not get people to really talk about him except for this announcement, and then it will go to the wayside, and then he will become just a really kind of a gray candidate where no one really pays attention to what they're actually doing. So a little bit down on that one. I wish he would have picked someone a little bit better to at least have a better conversation about moving forward. That being said, let's shift gears. That's all we have to say. I mean, they have a decent platform. We'll see if they can continue to go and who they're going to chip away from the Republicans or the Democrats.
What's trending today?
Other news is I missed the boat on this one, man. Definitely missed the boat. I am, first off, I'm not much of an investor. I'm kind of a bad investor because I don't really invest. I don't have a lot of money to invest. One of these days, though, we'll be sinking a lot of money into certain things. I have a few loosey-goosey fun things on the market that I've thrown money at here and there, and I've lost some. I've made a little bit, whatever. But I definitely missed the boat on the quick buck I could have made with Truth Social. Apparently, Truth Social is now official. The merger officially happened for it to go on to the stock market. And it started off at roughly $40 a share. The media, wanting to not make it as big as what it was really trying to downplay it, where the stock market was down a decent percent because it came on there and everybody was boycotting it and nobody was happy about it. No one's going to buy the shares and so on and so forth. Well, the stock apparently went from $40 a share, $41 a share, up to like $72 a share within a day. So if you bought stock into it, congratulations, you made a quick buck on that one, depending on how much money you actually sunk in to this guy. That also means that Donald Trump walked away with a cash value with the number of shares that he has of close to $4 billion worth of value, putting his total value as an individual at close to $6 billion. Says a lot for a candidate who they're trying to financially destroy on the campaign trail because they don't want him to be in the race, and they want to try and topple his entire empire he spent his entire lifetime building, from his businesses to his campaign to just the individual that he is. And they've tried to do everything they can to destroy him, putting him at $6 billion of net value now with both his companies and his properties, and now his Truth Social and everything that he's done. He is now considered one of the top 500 wealthiest individuals in the world. And because of that, I'm pretty sure that he will be able to find over the next 9 days the $175 million that's needed to pay for the civil asset fraud case that the Democrats in New York are trying to come after him for, which, if you've listened to them, they are livid of the fact that he does not have to pay the full $454 million. There was numerous different media outlets where they were interviewing some people saying, oh, I can't believe it. How dare them lower this value? If you're trying to be punished for something, you don't lower the value on this. Which, of course, we see the lowering of, you know, prison sentences, and we see the lowering of certain if you accept and plead guilty and the different deals that are made behind closed doors. But Donald Trump's not allowed to do that. Donald Trump's not allowed to do any of that. He's supposed to rot in prison the rest of his life, which is what their ultimate goal is here. I still think he needs to fight it. Personally, I mean, it was a ridiculous case in the first place. And while it was lowered to $175 million, he's got the money to put up a bond for it and take care of this issue and make it go away. It, to me, is still a principle of the matter that he shouldn't have to worry about this issue. But it is now official, Truth Social, apparently on the stock market, not advocating that you invest into it. But if you did, then pat yourself on the back, because I'm sure you've made a decent quick buck on that one. So Donald Trump moving forward is now one of the 500 wealthiest individuals in the world. And while he continues to rack up the cash, he can walk home with the paycheck and he can continue to campaign. And the Democrats are losing their minds because they see him inching forward in the polls while they continue to demonize him every which way they can.
We're all going to die because of you.
And we see a new poll that came out as of, what was this, today? Maybe over the weekend. We saw, according to Newsmax, there was a new poll that shows that more of the minority voters across the nation continue to look towards Donald Trump, where now the margin for the lead, at least in the African-American community, Donald Trump is now within a 20-point margin of Joe Biden, which never has been the case, not only for just Donald Trump, but for a Republican candidate in general. Usually, and then the last race in 2020, Joe Biden had a 60-point margin with black voters over Donald Trump. MSNBC reporting it over the weekend or on Friday last week that now Joe Biden only has a 20-point lead over Donald Trump when it comes to minority voters. And the simple question would be why? Why are we seeing so many of the minority communities? Not that we need to worry about identity politics for conservatives, because our policies and our view of the world actually work for everybody. But while they play identity politics and they are so fascinated by what the identity politics have to say about a certain matter, that we're seeing the women, we're seeing the Hispanics, we're seeing the Asians, we're seeing the Muslims, seeing the Jewish communities, we're seeing the black communities all begin to walk away from the Democrats. The house of cards beginning to topple, and the identities that they like to put in the nice little boxes and feel they have complete control over are now starting to dwindle and topple as well, which is good news for us, but they're scratching their heads and wondering why. Why are we seeing this change? And according to many in these communities, not only is it because the economy was better under Trump, because the jobs are doing better, because immigration wasn't as bad, illegal immigration, we got to be specific on that one, but also the fact that the legal system is now turned against Donald Trump. They've seen it in their own communities about how badly they've been treated, and they're seeing the resemblance against Donald Trump as well. So whether Democrats like it or not, when you try not to make a martyr out of somebody, you end up making a martyr out of somebody, and Donald Trump is now that scarecrow and that icon and that example of what their communities have gone through, or they feel like their communities have gone through, and they're seeing the resemblance, and they have pity on Donald Trump, and they know how corrupt the system is, and they want something changed about it. So why not support the guy who's going through the same garbage that they feel that their people have gone through as well?
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Hey, darn right it is. Welcome back into it. Your political therapist therifying you on a daily basis. And it sounds like we need a lot of that in today's times, right? We just need to go into a very zen mode because the world is a crazy place right now. Speaking of identity politics, by the way, from the Democrats, which is their favorite thing on the face of the earth, it's a very low information, very low intelligent, very low IQ thing to be focused so much on identity politics, your skin color, your gender, your sexual orientation, your history, your background, your beliefs, your whatever. That's all they care about. They like to put you in this nice little box to categorize you, but it doesn't matter. That's what they focus on. It's a very low and very low IQ, very low intelligent conversation to have. We're seeing it spread right now, and the segregation of society is happening even further because of the platform of the Democrat Party, to the point where this should be an example. And the other side, I'm telling you, I get it. Politics is divisive. I'm the hate speech talk radio guy, the hate talk radio conservative, the guy that just, you know, just lies about everything, right? We're just the fake news conservative Trump supporters.
You are fake news.
I get it. I get what the message is here. But just for a second, listen to me. For a second, just open your mind up and just absorb something into that thick skull. Just for a moment, try to just think about something outside of your echo chamber. I'm pleading with you. If there's ever an example of the proof that the progressive liberal Democrat Party throughout American history has not been the party of segregation, of racism, of Jim Crow laws, everything that the Democrat Party has done throughout the, if there's not a better example than this, please tell me what it is. Headline from Yahoo News today. And we go out to the state of California. Of course, we go to California. There's a headline out of the Sacramento Bee where the city of Sacramento and their city council is now considering making making the city of Sacramento a transgender sanctuary city. Now, it goes beyond this because I get it. You're so fascinated with, oh, what are you doing to manipulate your body? We're going to protect you from that, and we're going to be a sanctuary city. If that's what you believe, cool. I don't really care. That's the beauty of states. That's the beauty of sovereign states. That's the beauty of the 10th Amendment. That's the beauty of actually having states where you can live that you actually agree with the policies or disagree with the policies. And within those states, we also have the cities, and you can do that based on individual cities. You can do that based on individual communities. You can live your life as the social experiment in California, however you want to. And Sacramento's no different. That's not the point I want to make, though, even though it is ironic that this is what they want to focus on and make it a sanctuary city for transgenders in the city of Sacramento. They take it another level, though, as according to Councilwoman Katie Valenzuela, one of the city council members for District Number 4 for Sacramento, she has proposed the resolution that would bar city staff, including officers and contractors to the city, from detaining people for seeking or providing gender-affirming health care, which I don't know where we're actually detaining anybody. I've never heard of that. Now, here in Kansas, where I'm from, we are making it against the law to do that to minors and that doctors can't give that treatment to minors. But just for anybody willy-nilly to say, like, hey, I want a transgender surgery, you're like, no, you can't have that or else we're going to throw you in jail. Like, that's not happening anywhere. So they're already using the phobia and the fear of politics to try and create this resolution. But it goes a step further. And again, try to remember that this is the party of segregation, the party of Jim Crow, the party of racism, the party of slavery, the party of yada, 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 the progressive liberal Democrat Party. The resolution not only would ban any officers or contractors within the city from detaining people who are seeking transgender-affirming health care, but it would also bar the city from cooperating with out-of-state jurisdictions that are criminalizing gender-affirming care. So if we say in Kansas, for example, where I'm coming from, that we are going to criminalize gender-affirming care for minors. I don't give a rip what adults do. You're an adult. You can do whatever the heck you want to. But as a minor, you're not going to be allowed to do that. The city of Sacramento would not cooperate with any out-of-state jurisdiction. Wouldn't cooperate with us. Wouldn't talk to us. Wouldn't mingle with us. Literal segregation. What the party does. What the Democrats do. Again, if you have a better example of how Republicans segregate, I'd be dying to hear that. Lots more coming up. Stay
this
here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When reason meets radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. Welcome back into it. You're a political therapist trying to cram that 10 pounds reason into that 5-pound bag, trying to rebrand the millennial generation one radio listener at a time. So wonderful to have you along with us each and every day as you always do. So we have the segregation of our economy, which is unfortunate. We have city by city not wanting to associate with other ones, not wanting to work with other ones. We have businesses, obviously, which, look, I got to pat you on the back. You got to pat yourself on the back. The protests that you've done with things that you don't agree with, Bud Light, Now we have Disney. Now we have Doritos, which makes me sad. I'm a sucker for Doritos. But with them hiring their diversity weird stuff going on, it's now a segregated economy. We had the push for ESG with the social credit score they're trying to implement on us through the financial institutions, through banks, through businesses, to where the business can only stay alive and function if they get on board with that, meaning no matter where you spend your money, then you have to go along with this ESG supportive movement as well. Good news is with the passing of this the absurd, ridiculous $1.2 trillion spending package we just saw in the past week, one of the few bright lights in that one was the dissolving of the Office of Diversity and Equity and Inclusion at the federal level. We'll see where that ends up going at the end of the day. So this is where they're going to get you. And right now, it's unfortunate, but we are starting to live in a segregated economy, which it's only a matter of time until that segregated economy turns into another segregation of society in general, which is not good for the health of the nation. All right, I want to shift gears a little bit here and talk about, well, the economy a little bit more, but in a little bit different fashion.
What's trending today?
As you know, the Biden administration's been out there on the campaign trail really for the last 3 years saying about how great the economy is, how great Bidenomics has been, the Bidenflation that's going on, which I have to say, again, I encourage you to go to a website, Bidenomics.com. When you go there, you're not going to see the pro-Joe Biden propaganda that's spread all out there. The genius of Americans for Prosperity, our partners here on the radio program, if you go to Bidenomics.com, you'll see the real truth about what Bidenomics has done and how bad it's been for the economy. But one of those things that they continue to hype up, and I don't know how they can still try to lie through their teeth about this, is saying that they've created 15 million jobs, they have job record growth right now, and how everything's great. And I really don't know if that's necessarily the truth or not. Talking about that and so much more, he's the Employment Policy Fellow for Americans for Prosperity. Excited to have back on the program with us here, Mr. Austin Bannon. Austin, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. You know, I'm employed, but I was employed before Biden took office, so he can't claim myself in those numbers.
Not part of that 15 million. How in the world do they get away with saying that? I mean, I get that we shut down the economy nationwide during COVID, and they're like, all right, you can go back to work now. And they're like, look at all the jobs we created. This is great. That's insane to try and pull that off.
Yeah, he's not the first to do it, but he's been able to really exploit that. I think that's what it comes down to largely. We do have a resilient economy. Bad government policies don't destroy America overnight. There's a lot of great businesses and workers and ingenuity in the country, so you can overcome bad policies to some degree. So our economy is resilient, but a lot of those jobs, kind of as you were noting, there was a low point, a lot of disruptions from the pandemic or government policies that shut down businesses and caused those disruptions. And if you start from that low point, anything can look like success. But we're still lagging. We still have 9-10 million job openings. Some of the numbers in recent months, about 70,000 jobs, fewer than what was estimated in the December and January jobs report. So it kind of, sometimes it lags behind and you find out the numbers weren't as rosy in previous months as they indicated all the same. So
are we back on the trajectory, at least for if the COVID pandemic never happened, with just the natural job growth, the natural economic growth, the natural expansion of the U.S. economy in the country month by month, quarter by quarter, year by year? Are we back on that track relatively close to if COVID-19 never happened, or do we still have some catching up to do to get back to where we could have been at this point?
If you're extra rosy, you could say it's not, off to an epic degree, but we're talking several million fewer jobs than there should be. So it is still a significant amount, even in a country the size of America. Mm. And it also doesn't really account for the general growth that can occur in a healthy economy. So you're kind of looking at a baseline where things were doing quite well, a number of years ago, coming into 2020. So what those numbers were those were rising and improving. So we haven't caught up to where that was by several million, and it could have been even better than that. And labor force participation rates, that's one of the places you can look a little more broadly, and you can see the numbers are down still, even though they've certainly recovered from the worst of it.
Yeah. We saw, and they were again praising again the fourth quarter, saying that we avoided a recession, we avoided the downturn of the economy, that we still saw people spending money during the holidays, that we saw temporary hires and temporary jobs during the holiday season with companies that were adding, and everything was great going into the fourth quarter of 2023. Then we saw the report in February for the month of January that showed that we saw one of the biggest temporary layoffs in the nation. Oh, I think we just lost Austin. We'll have to get him back on in just a moment. I wanted to ask, though, the turnaround where the massive layoffs happened at the beginning of the year for those temporary workers. And if we lost all of those, then where the economy stands now, because temporary work is temporary work, and that's great, and that helps us during the holiday time, you know, get that little extra cash for the holidays, which we need with an economy with 20% inflation over the past 3 years, thanks to the Joe Biden economy. But I'm curious on where we stand with the jobs now, and especially with temporary help in the nation. We'll get Austin back on the program here momentarily. Austin Bannon with the Employment Policy Fellow for Americans for Prosperity. I do encourage you, by the way, to go to Bidenomics.com and see some of those numbers, because that is kind of an interesting stat to read. I think we got him back on line here. Austin, we got you back.
We do.
Yeah, there we go.
Have a great reception. Maybe we have too secret of a conversation going on right here.
I'm telling you, I think they're coming after us. Yeah, I think they're coming after us. Now, I wanted to ask, with the mass layoffs that we heard about with some of the temporary workers in January after the holidays were done, did that affect the economy? Because they tried to say the economy was great. We avoided the recession with how much spending and how much hiring was happening during the temporary season of the holidays, and then it all went away, and we saw one of the biggest layoffs of temporary workers right at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I mean, you can just consider in the holidays, of course, there was always traditionally a lot of hiring, but you think about the influx of delivery services and the kind of jobs that go with that, and when there's a big flood of people shopping in stores in between that, there's always some disruption there, but you're right. It's, maybe even more so the case right now. And we're seeing inflation kind of tick the wrong direction a bit again, too, in these more recent reports. So we're certainly not out of the water, to say the least.
Yeah. Talk about small business for a moment. I know the small business really doesn't have a lot of representation in Washington, D.C. And Joe Biden obviously comes out, the Democrats in general come out and talk about millionaires and billionaires. We need to tax them. They're not being taxed enough. They're not paying taxes. They just avoid taxes, which we know is not true. But when we talk about business in general, 99% of job growth and economic growth in this nation is small business. And by definition, a small business is a company that has less than 500 employees. That's considered small business in the nation. Do they have, do you think, proper representation? And how are they taking the brunt of all these regulations, taxes, inflation that we're seeing in the nation right now?
Yeah, they may lack some proper representation. They definitely don't lack attention from the Biden administration. I think that's kind of what you're getting at here. I think that what we've seen with Bidenomics is certainly a lot of government spending, and the deficit levels each year and the national debt are a huge concern. But then you can look at more specific stories, like you're saying, small businesses, I kind of say there's sort of this big business or black market sort of mentality. Feel like you're almost pushed underground, some businesses, to survive, because the way the regulatory agenda is of Biden, especially in not just the employment space, but especially in the employment space, businesses can't afford to keep up with the red tape. They either can't hire the resources they need to expand their business because of the red tape, or the red tape itself and the fines and the fees and the uncertainty around it just stifle their chance to grow. It's kind of the idea that if you're not a large business, it's more difficult to regulate you. So I think from a Biden perspective, no matter what their rhetoric is, they can you can see their agenda. It pushes people towards larger businesses. Businesses have to do that to survive, and then it allows certain interest groups like labor unions and the labor union leaders to have a easier population and easier workforce to then target for unionization.
Yeah, which, Austin, I thought we weren't supposed to have monopolies, but it sounds like this push is really consolidating power and consolidating the free market into a few major corporations as opposed to numerous different small businesses that are all competing in a single market. I thought that's what the beauty of the free market, laissez-faire capitalist system was that we had, was to have that kind of competition, not just consolidate all the power into two different major conglomerates that are competing, I say that in air quotes, but going after each other in that sense.
Yeah, and it's probably also true that America can celebrate a business that grows and is successful, and there's nothing inherently wrong with, you know, becoming a large business because you're so successful. But when the reason that happens is because people are trying to survive government policies, and while competitors can't survive them, then you're not seeing it, you know, come through healthy reasons, like you're saying. It's not an open market. It's not a free market system that led us to that. You know, and when we have a dynamic economy like this, you know, you would never have businesses control the entire market somewhere, because it's very easy to innovate, especially in a digital age. Anything you come up with, other innovators can match it, and they can find the resources and the customers right away in ways that you couldn't before. Yeah. So it should be less, not more, than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, well, capitalism does a great job of being able to fill a void when there's a demand in the market. And right now it's getting more and more difficult to actually be able to fill that void with new innovations, like you said, new business, new people coming up and rising to that challenge, because so many just have their fingers on the pulse and that control. We're hanging out with Austin Bannon. He's the Employment Policy Fellow at Americans for Prosperity, which you can check out online at prosperityispossible.com. Also, check out the Bidenomics website, Bidenomics.com, and see the real facts on that one. Got to take a break when we come back. You mentioned unions. Let's go there. We know how I feel about unions on the program. We'll have some fun with that when we come back. Right around the corner. Stay here.
The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into it. Yeah, we got a couple minutes left here of the show. Trying to cram as much of that reason, common sense, rationale into a one-hour program like we do every single day right now. We're hanging out with Austin Bannon. He's the Employment Policy Fellow at Americans for Prosperity. Prosperityispossible.com. You can go check them out. Great partners with us here on the radio show as we look at the job growth, the job numbers, the Biden economy, and how things are shaping up. Now, Austin, the Biden administration on the campaign trail says that they're bringing jobs back to America, and they're focusing on those labor union jobs, those union jobs that build America, that how great unions actually are in this nation. But yet union membership has been on the decline over the past decade. I know really this big UAW strike that they had a few months ago, they're trying to make everybody's contracts go about the same time so they could do a mass layoff, a mass strike, a mass walkout, and in essence do the Viva la Revolution and actually take back over the industries, not just auto, but every industry out there. Is that going to work? Because right now, with how businesses understand they need to take care of their employees, I don't know that unions are as relevant as what they used to be.
If the market can play its own role and competition is allowed to persevere, then I don't think that could work. But if we're talking about a second Biden administration, for instance, you never know what this could do, because there's an administration, earlier, you know, there's a lot of spending, there's a lot of other issues that you can associate with Bidenomics, but there is a labor agenda, and the regulations that are coming out are intended to help unions. They're not only emboldening them to go on strike and try to unionize, but they're making the process easier. They're making it a very difficult process for businesses to even communicate with their own employees, to have freedom of speech, to let them know what they think about unions without facing unfair labor practice violations. There's a big push in regulations. It's called a CMEX decision, which is a private company that the National Labor Relations Board ruled against. And this is and they're also doing what's called ambush elections, where they shorten the window between when somebody files for a union and when an election takes place. That's to shorten the time that a business can communicate, shorten the time that a business can actually figure out and how to comply with an election. And then they're going to say that the communication the business makes because of the CMEX decision might be undermining the labor rights of workers in the union, because if they've signed a bunch of cards that say that they're interested in a union vote, that's supposed to be this affirmative consent that they actually want a union. And we don't need a secret ballot anymore. That's what this kind of regulation says. So it's difficult for a business to communicate. And then workers who might be pressured to sign these cards just to get a union away from their doorstep at home, or stop calling their personal phone numbers or meeting them in the community, if they just sign a card hoping that they can have a private vote and then vote no, that's actually on the line right now. In fact, 33 senators Democratic senators had sent out letters to a lot of auto companies around the country, the different auto plants that aren't currently unionized, telling them they need to have labor neutrality. Labor neutrality means don't talk. Let us come in as unions and enter the workplace and gather signatures from your workers and tell them everything that we think is great about a union while you do absolutely nothing. And if you do something after signing this agreement, we automatically get to unionize without even getting those signatures. So there's actual political pressure coming from some progressive leaders on top of Biden. And then you mix that with the different rules and regulations that the administration is putting forth. You know, we haven't seen a ton of union growth during this administration just yet. But everything they can do to tilt it that way, they are doing.
That's a scary thought. They're essentially, I don't know how government has the right to step in and do that, because it's the private market. It's between the employee and the company, and the company, for them to say, hey, stay silent, let us negotiate and let us do this. And if you say a word, then we're going to unionize and we're going to destroy you. This is a full out assault and attack on private industry, and it's devastating. And we're only going to see it get worse, unfortunately. Austin, we're out of time, my friend. He's the employment policy fellow at Americans for Prosperity. Check him out at prosperityispossible.com. Also at Bidenomics.com. Definitely check out that website and see all the fun facts about what's going on with the economy today. Austin, we appreciate the time very much, my friend, as always. Keep up the fight. Let's do this again real soon.
All right. Thank you.
Let's do it. Yeah, absolutely. Always love the conversation. There it is. Can you imagine the federal government saying, hey, business, step aside. We got this. And if you say a word, we're going to come after you with the unions. We're going to unionize everybody. I think people are starting to realize the power that we no longer have in the private sector and how some of that needs to change, which is why they're going for either a business guy like Donald Trump that's, you know, like him or dislike him, the outside establishment and a business owner, or someone like an RFK Jr. who's an anti-establishment guy as well. We're out of time, though. That does it for us today. Podcast up in a little bit. Until then, we're back at it tomorrow for the middle of the week, getting closer to that Easter weekend. It's time for you to speak up, speak out, speak loud, speak proud, speak the truth, and always speak some reason. This is The Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio.